Okay. Good. So good morning. Just before starting, I have an organizational question for you. As you know, starting from next Monday, there will be a visiting professor for you. Valentina Perissi is actually is an Italian name because graduated in Italy, but she's 20 years working in USA. Now she is in Boston. And she will spend only this week, next week, and then not the first, but the second week after Easter with you, okay? So we have to concentrate a little bit the lessons for Valentina Perissi, okay? And I am trying to organize the first week, next week, to make her making three lessons instead of two, okay? So the question for you is, can you agree about putting a lesson on Tuesday afternoon? Because usually we have Monday morning, right? Okay, and then we have Wednesday morning as a normal lessons. So the possibilities are either that I make an exchange with Giovanna Di Nardo, okay, or that I put a lesson on Tuesday afternoon. I would prefer Tuesday afternoon, but I'm asking you for any problem. You have lesson of what? What? Parasitology. How many of you are making parasitology? Okay. I don't know. This. Because otherwise we have to exchange with Giovanna Di Nardo. Okay, I try to check. Okay, good. So as I told you, today we are making the discussion of research paper number one that I hope you have read or at least try to read. So why I am discussing this paper? Because I try to show you how to proceed to study the research papers. Okay, so the next four research papers you will have to study by yourself. Okay, but today we go through the paper slowly just to show you what are the points that you have to take care of. Anytime you have to study a research paper. So actually this lesson makes part of the first chapter, is the last one, and we started already the second one, and we will finish the second one this week. Okay, so the subject of the paper, as you remember, is repositioning to the nuclear lamina drives repression. And this is the question that we actually left as unresolved at the very end of the lesson, if you remember. So the question is, we know that usually heterochromatic genes, silenced genes, are on the border, on the periphery of the nucleus. But the question is the egg before So the problem is the fact of being heterochromatic that brings the genes on the periphery, or either any gene that goes to the periphery will become heterochromatic. So this is a kind of unsolved question. So these authors actually try to answer to this question by making a study that was published 10 years ago in Nature. And just before starting the discussion of the paper, just take your attention to some points that probably you know already. So you know that Nature is probably the most important journal for general biology, not only for biology, of course. And it publishes different kind of articles. Usually letters are kind of scientific reports that are very quick. Usually they say 4 pages, sometimes they are 5 pages, no more than that, okay? And This, as you know, is the important reference volume and the pages you find here. And this is the DOI. Everybody of you knows the DOI, I think. DOI is the Digital Object Identifier. It's a unique number, so you can identify the paper by that one. Why I am telling you that? Because as soon as Valentina Perisi will finish her first lesson, we will start the search for your papers. You remember that in the very first time we met, I told you that as a part of exam you have to report on a scientific paper. So starting from next week you have to choose your own paper to discuss, and then of course you are not sending me the PDF, the paper, to make a judgment if it fits or not with the reports. You just send me, please, the DOI. It's more than enough. I can reach the paper and see the abstract and then decide if it's good or not for you. Okay, so do you know also that the authors, and just to know, usually in biology, not in other sciences, for example in mathematics or physics, they behave differently, but in biology usually the first name is the people that actually did the study in the lab, okay? So the person that usually they are postdoc, I mean after the first job after the doctorate, the PhD, they have the responsibility of conducting and making the study. And usually the last author is the laboratory chief, people who funds the money to the research, okay? So this is important also, because if you find an article that is interesting for you and the subject in general is interesting, you never go in the literature to find for these guys, because probably they are occasional in the lab or they just arrived in the lab, okay? You find for the last author that probably has a long story on the subject, okay? So you can find the other papers he has published on the same subject or related. Okay, so citation. The citation that you have for the papers are usually several different formats. You can have, this is the PubMed citation that you find in the PubMed. Okay, if you make a search on PubMed, you have this kind of reference in which you have the authors, the title, and all the digital object identifier. And this EPUB means that the first time the paper is published, it's just published as electronic version, and then it goes to the paper. Okay, and this is another identifier, very important, is the PubMed identifier. Okay, and this also can be used as a unique code. Then you have not to put everything when you, for example, when you write a report or you write a paper, and then you cite any other article. You just to make this full citation, that this is enough, more than enough. Okay. Or to use the short citation in which you put the first author at all and then just the volume and pages and year, and that's it, okay? Okay, so Nature has other scientific journals that are, we say, is general scientific journals. Okay, like Science, for example, or the Proceeding of the National Academy of Sciences, or whatsoever. Okay, have different formats for paper. So they publish different kind of stories. The first thing is articles. Articles usually are very long papers. They can occupy something like 10 pages, 12 pages or more. And they are complete research work, okay? So they usually report for a very long story that starts from the beginning and go to the conclusions, okay? Letters, on the contrary, are quicker reports, and they report for a special part of a subject, okay? And then, for example, Nature also published two other kind of articles, for example, News and Views. News and Views is interesting because usually are one page articles in which established scientists reports about some paper that appeared in Nature or other papers. So just to make a short comment on the paper. This is interesting because sometimes you don't have the time or the feeling to read all the paper. You can read this News and Views and gives you a flavor of what has been discovered. Okay, so as you know, usually scientific papers are divided in this section. So you have an introduction, then materials and methods, then results, and discussion, and then the bibliography. Okay, so it's a general structure that you know probably because you did a small triennale thesis or something. Okay. So the fact is that Nature Letters, for example, do not have this kind of classical structure. They are a kind of continuous text, as you have seen on the paper. But if you look inside, actually, they have this kind of structure. It's just cryptic, not with the titles. So, for example, just let me go to the abstract. You know what the abstract is. Abstract is a kind of short resume of what is the content of the paper, okay? And this is exactly what you find in PubMed, for example, okay? If you go to PubMed and you click on the titles, you can reach the abstracts, okay? And then if you look in the abstract, you see that the structure that I told you, introduction, purpose, etc., is some way the way to go inside, okay? So when you read a paper like this one or read an abstract, usually you have a short introduction here, okay? And if you see, this is the article you had, okay? Says nuclear compartmentalization seems to have an important role in regulating mitochondrial genes. Although studies on immunoglobulin and other loci have shown a correlation between position of the nuclear lamina and gene repression, the functional consequences of this compartmentalization remain untested. So this is the introduction. It poses the question, saying what is unknown. Okay, this is the important thing. Then you have the purpose. And then we devised an approach for inducible tethering of genes to the inner nuclear membrane and tested the consequences of such repositioning on gene activity in mouse fibroblasts. Three lines, but actually this is the essential thing contained in the article. Okay, so they developed the system to test whether a gene, when it is brought to the lamina, it is silenced. And then results, okay, and this is just a short resume of the result they got. Okay, so we demonstrate that repositioning of chromosomal region to the nuclear lamina that is dependent on the breakdown and reformation of the nuclear envelope, and say moreover, tethering leads to the accumulation of lamins and protein, but not to the association with pericentromatic heterochromatin or nuclear pore. Recruitment of genes to the ENM can result in the transcriptional repression. So this is the results, okay? And this, of course, is the conclusion of the paper. So if you look carefully to the abstract, usually you find all the story. You can understand what is the problem. And this is exactly the structure that you should report, okay? So when you will make your report, that will be approximately at the end of April, first week of May, more or less, okay, is exactly what you have to do. So first, to identify the problem, the scientific problem that was open before people started to make research, okay? Second, how, what they wanted to know by their experiments, how they made the experiments and what the results are, and then which kind of novel conclusion they could reach. This is very important because you make a study and then at the end of the study you have results and you have to increase your knowledge on the subject. Okay, so these are the points essential to focus to. Okay, now if you remember how the nature paper is made, you have a kind of bold character, bold type abstract, and then when the abstract finishes, start with the text. This is the introduction, actually. It's not written that it's introduction, but it is. And so this period here, from paragraph starting from here to here, is actually the introduction. In the introduction, they just say what is known until that moment about the story. So they say that the nuclear periphery is usually occupied by heterochromatin and blah, 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 okay? And the nuclear periphery is mammalian cell is constituted by proteins. You actually compiled a very good database of nuclear lamina proteins in the Moodle, I saw, and so on. And the question is, the ability of this nuclear compartment to regulate gene activity has not been functionally tested in metazoan cells. Okay, so this is the question. So results start here. We designed, and so means that we started our work, a two-component inducible system, blah, 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 blah. And they describe what they did. Okay, so this is the methodology, actually. Okay, in other articles published on different journals, you usually find sections, and at this point, usually you find materials and method section. This is not written, but it's actually the same. Okay, so they say we designed a two-component inducible system that would relocalize an integrated reporter gene from the interior of a mammalian nucleus to the inner membrane. Figure 1A. So this is the first citation of figure 1A. Okay? And then the report constant is comprised of blah, blah, blah. And this is the description of the vector. And as you note here, they say the lac operator that is constituted binding site for Escherichia coli lac repressor, figure 1 and supplementary figure 1A. This is quite common today. It was really uncommon several years ago, but now it's very common that since the space, the room in journals is very reduced, I told you that for letters in Nature you have only 4 pages, okay? You have a little space to write everything, okay? So the journals accept supplementary material that they publish online. So that material is not published in the journal, but it's published on the Nature website. So if you go there, you find the supplementary figure, the supplementary material, and inside the supplementary material there are additional figures. Yes?
I have a question on the previous part.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the bold section and the following part?
Because yeah, the bold section is what we call the abstract. And this is the section that is published on PubMed. Okay? So it's only that one. And this is a resume, is a summary. Okay? Good. So you go to supplementary section and you find this material there. Okay? So let's start. Supplementary material is important to understand. You have not to systematically revise all the supplementary materials, but when you don't understand something that is written in the main paper, you go to the supplementary material to have the explanation for that, okay? So, now the system. So, what they did was to find a system to relocate a gene, okay? That's the idea. So they built up a two-component system. The first is a reporter vector, okay, that is illustrated here. The reporter vector, sorry, I have to see whether I have the, okay. The reporter vector is made by a construct, okay, you see here, that is made with a real reporter construct, and this is TK, that means Suggestions.
Thymidine kinase.
What thymidine kinase? All the genes of the thymidine kinase? No, this is a promoter, okay? TK is the promoter, and then Hig. Hig is hygromycin. Is a gene that confers resistance to the antibiotic hygromycin. Okay, so it's a classical vector, okay? And why they use TK? I'm making the questions that I will make at the exam, okay? Why they use TK as a promoter?
Is it a strong promoter?
Strong promoter. And another characteristic? Sorry?
It's viral. Being viral?
Yeah.
And it's adapted for most of
the cells. Yeah. It works in most of the cells. So it's not a kind of cell-specific expression that will probably limit your usage, okay? So TK promoter linked to the hygromycin's, let's say, cDNA, that means the coding sequence, okay? And this, of course, is a selectable vector, okay? So they took cells, transfected this vector, and this vector, as you know, can be expressed transiently, as you remember, so it means 2 days or 3 days, or very rare, very occasional events, it can be integrated in chromosomes, okay? So it breaks the chromosome and integrates in a random place in the chromosomes, okay? If the cell integrates this reporter, it will be resistant to hygromycin. So I make transfection, then I leave for a couple of days just to be expressed and so on, and then I put hygromycin in the culture and I continue the culture. After a couple of weeks, I have only a few clones in the plate, and those clones will have the gene integrated inside. Okay? Good. So the vector is not that only. As you can see, after a while, you have a lac O. What is lac O? Lac what?
Operator.
Not operon, eh? Operator. This is the region, if you remember the lactose operon in Escherichia coli, it contains 3 genes, and then in the promoter there is a lac operator, okay, that actually binds a protein. You remember which protein it is bound? Lac repressor, that usually is indicated as lac I. Okay? Good. And this system is just a system, you remember, no galactose. The repressor is bound, okay, to the DNA. So there is interaction. Repressor, operator, when no galactose, no lactose, not any kind of beta galactoside, okay? When lactose arrives, or any kind of beta galactoside arrives, binds to the repressor, and this conformation change, the repressor will go out of the DNA and the transcription of the gene starts. Okay? So it's just an inducible on-off binding of the protein to the DNA. So what they did was to put several lac operators there. So the next question is a single operator or an array of operators? So this question is answered if you go to the supplementary materials. It's not in the first paper, okay? You go to the supplementary material and you find in figure 1A how this vector is composed, okay? And you see that this is the HSV TK promoter. Correctly, somebody of you told me is a viral TK, okay? This is the hygromycin cDNA, and this is the poly-A tail that is necessary, as you know, to express correctly any kind of genes in a mammalian cell. Then you have a 2.3 kilobyte spacer in between, okay? And then they put lock operator. As you can see, is everything but a single operator. This is 256 sites. So it's a kind of repeat of lock operators, okay? And each repeat will bind one protein, one repressor, okay? Now, how it works, we say that in Escherichia coli is the lactose binding, okay, that make the switch. We don't use lactose in the system because lactose is used. So after a few hours, you don't have any more lactose. So you have to use a molecule that is not hydrolyzable, so it will stay in the culture for a long time, and it binds to the operator, and it keeps it out of the contact. This is IPTG, indole propyl thiogalactoside. It's a kind of synthetic molecule in which you have a beta galactoside bond, but the rest of the molecule is not hydrolyzable, so it stays like this. Okay? So you can make switch off or switch on depending on the IPTG. Okay? When you have IPTG, the interaction is not there, as you can see. Each repressor molecule will bind one molecule of IPTG and is out of the contact from DNA. When you remove IPTG from the culture medium, you will get interaction of LacI to LacO. Good. So let me see what happens in terms of checking. So what they do now is to check the story. Okay, so if you go through the slides, at this point they check if the clones now they work correctly as they design and imagine. Okay. So this is the story in the figure one. You see that they draw a kind of scheme in which you have the working of the system. Okay. Now the second component, because I told you this is the first component, I mean what we described now is the first component, the reporter vector, and then there is another component, and the other component is this fusion protein here that is called GFP LecI Delta EMD. What is this? So go to understand what it is. Okay, this first abbreviations. So ONM stands for outer nuclear membrane, because you remember that the nuclear membrane is a double membrane. Yeah, INM is an inner nuclear membrane, and the proteins are the proteins that you know, okay? And not this emerine that is a major component of the lamins. And this is the protein, the fusion is GFP, LacI, delta emerine, okay? So what it means? Means that they realize the fusion protein in which they took the delta emerine domain, that is this green part that you see here, is the C-terminal domain. Actually, they removed a part of the emerine protein because part of the emerine protein is actually a transcriptional repressor. So, of course, if you use a transcriptional repression, the gene will be repressed. So they took out the repressive domain and just kept the part which binds to the lamins. You see here this tail, green tail that you see here is the part of the protein that actually inserts in the membrane and interacts with the lamins. And this protein is fused to GFP that everybody of you know very well, okay, the green fluorescent protein, okay, and then they made another fusion with LacI, so Escherichia coli repressor of the lactose opium. So they made two constructs, the First one has the three components that I told you, so emerin, GFP, and LAC-I. And the second construct was just GFP and LAC-I. What is used for? It is used just as a control, because of course it lacks the emerin tail and will not go to the periphery of the nucleus. Okay? So this is a control protein. So how did they proceed for making this kind of cells with all these kind of reporters and proteins and so on and so on? So they took cells, they are fibroblasts, they took the cells, they transfected with the first vector, TKIG, LACO, okay? Then hygromycin selection for a while, and they established transfected clones. After having established these transfected clones, they transfected again the vector encoding the fusion proteins. Okay? And this can be made in transient transfection or again in stable transfection, depending on the kind of work they do. But usually most of the experiments were did with the transient transfection this time. Okay? So at this point, you see, you go to the initial clones, okay, and look if there are foci, because of course, if you have a, okay, if the first reporter gene is integrated in chromosomes, okay, and then you transfect the cells with the reporter protein, GFP, LAC-I, they will bind to this chromosomal place, and you will see a spot, a fluorescent spot on the cell, okay? And this is exactly what they did. If you look at the figures, okay, this is exactly what they say, okay? So these are the spots, okay? So if you transfect the cells with the version which has not the emerin tail, it's only the GFP and LAC-I, this protein will bind to the chromosomal location where there are the LAC operator arrays, and you will see the spots over there, okay? So they selected, of course, I told you, when you transfect the cells and then you treat with hygromycin, you establish clones, resistant clones. Each clone has a different chromosomal situation. One of those can be have maybe incorporated, I don't know, 10 copies of the reporter. Another one has incorporated only 2 copies of the reporter. Another one has incorporated 100, and so on. So all the clones have different, and they selected 2 clones, clone M and clone S, just to have a comparison. As you can see, clone M gives 4 spots. You see there, 4 spots. That means that the reporter has been integrated in different 4 different loci. Okay? And the spots are also quite big, as you can see here, meaning that probably the reporter has integrated as a head-to-tail multiple copies. Okay? So you have a bright, big signal of the GFP. And this one, on the contrary, is a different situation in which you have many different signals but smaller. So probably the integration was not say a single but smaller repeats somewhere in the chromosome. So they decided to go through these experiments using this clone M and clone S. So higher copies number and lower copy number. Okay. So let's go to the okay. So what they checked was to try to find the genes, and as you have seen in the images before, the GFP LAC-I actually gives a very little signal in the clone S. So they used the different technology to reveal where the reporter gene is in the cells, that is FISH. Okay, so they used fluorescent DNA in situ hybridization to obtain the signal. Also, the problem is that in the images you see before on the figures, this was a 2D fish. 2D means that the cell is made flat, okay, on the slide, and then you make the fish and you take a 2D image. This is quite difficult because, of course, the nuclei has a thickness, and you never know exactly if you take the correct point for that. Okay, so they decide to go to the 3D fish, and 3D means that the nuclei are kept in the original spherical form, okay, on the slide, and then you make a confocal scanning, okay, so you just see the section in which the image is, okay. In this condition, they say that actually the GFP lucky gives a low signal, so they use a fish to make this one, okay. And so if you go to figure 1B and C, and also to the supplementary figure, there is a kind of quantitative assessment of these reporters in the cells. Okay, so this is figure 1B, okay, where they refer here, 1B and C, and so you see this is figure 1, and these are the images that are made with DNA fish. Okay, let me go to a larger image, and again you see here this is used only the fusion without hemorrhine, okay, so no recruitment to the periphery, and in fact you see that these are the spots of the fish, okay. What is the ring, the red ring outside?
Envelope.
Yeah, envelope. That is probably stained with what? Is it red by itself? Not really. This is a immuno staining. Okay, they used antibody against lamin B. Okay, conjugated with a red dye or something, so you can see the nuclear lamina. This is important, otherwise you just see spots. You don't know where they are. Okay, so this is the nucleoplasmic location of the genes, so no hemorrhine. On the contrary, when you transfect the vector encoding for delta hemorrhine, LACAI and GFP, okay, the immunofish, look at this. These two spots are clearly on the membrane. Okay, clearly on the lamins. You see that? Clearly. There, another image here. Okay, so this is in clone M. In clone S, of course, it's a little more difficult because I told you they are smaller and single. So this is the nucleoplasm location, and this is the membrane location, okay, lamin location. So the system works apparently, okay? So this is just this first experiment is just to understand if the system they designed works. Nothing new, just to understand, okay? Okay, this is the general image. That's it, okay. The problem now is that when you have pictures like this one, is that enough? I mean, if you examine the cells and you see in one cell, one nuclei, you see this situation, are you confident that the system works? Of course not, because you have many cells, and this, the fact of observing a situation like this one can be circumstantial. Just in one cell, for any kind of random case, you can see the spot there. So you have to count many cells. Okay, so they took an image analyzer and they tried to make image analysis of all the cells in the plate, okay, counting several of them. So they made a quantitative evaluation of the location. Okay, so this is figure D. As you can see, this is percent lack of signal at the nuclear periphery. So they counted how many red circles they found and how many of those had a peripheric fish signal, okay? And so this is the percent you see. This is GFP lucky, so the cancer that is not peripheric. Okay, and as you see that still you have a 20% of random, casual. It's not probably, it's due to the fact that sometimes the chromosome gives the signal close to the membrane. Okay, but when you use the construct with delta hemerin, the percentage goes up to 70%. And this is the standard deviation of the measurements, okay? So they repeated the measurements on different plates and found this one. And clone S, the same. Okay, so this is the background localization, and this, when you have the delta hemerin fusion, you go up to almost 100%, 90%, okay? So the system apparently works as they designed it, and so they could move on. They could move on to the next experiment. And the next experiment is to, as I told you at the beginning, to use IPTG or to remove IPTG to switch on and switch off the peripheral localization. Okay? And they did this experiment, and the first thing, very important, that is written in the paper, and this is the absolutely novel thing that they found, because nobody before this group actually realized this kind of experiment, is that the relocalization, so when you take out the IPTG, okay, the chromosome will move, the chromosome with the integrated reporter will move to the periphery, okay, and attach to the hemerin bound lacai, okay. But this is not possible in a stationary cell. They say clearly, we know that repositioning, so when you, okay, you remove IPTG, repositioning to the membrane, requires breakdown and reformation of the nuclear envelope during mitosis. This is extremely important if you think about it, because we can see that, okay, you have a gene, okay, a gene or a lossy or whatever, that is inside the nucleoplasm. And you can think that just making a switch on, switch off, this is dynamic and will arrive to bind to the nuclear periphery. No, it's not possible. They say we never could obtain relocalization in interface nuclei, stationary interface nuclei. Okay? We have to culture the cells in a condition in which the cells divide, so they go and they undergo mitosis, and during mitosis, of course, the nucleus is disrupted, chromosome are made, and then the situation is put back. And at that point they see relocalization of the genes. Okay, so this is the first conclusion, very important. Okay, so the experiments are those, minus IPTG plus IPTG. And then second question, okay. So do we, it was actually the first question of the paper. So when I relocalize the gene there, is the gene silenced? This is the most important point. So what they did is to make experiments with plus IPTG and minus IPTG. There is a part here in which they actually check again. I can skip it if you want, because it's just another check of what happens in the nuclear lamina. So they stained. If you look at figure 2, this is figure 2. They stained with different antibodies against membrane components like LEP2, Lamin-B1, and so on, and component of the nuclear pores. Just saying that actually where you have the relocalization, you have all the complexes of heterochromatin, so you don't have nuclear pores. It's just a kind of like this. And they also use the famous DAM-IID assays. You remember that we explained it a few lessons ago, we talked about lemon. So what they did was to make a fusion using DAM fused to lemon B1 and DAM fused to emerin. Okay. And as you can see, by PCR they measured the 5' border of the lac operon, the lac operator's array, okay, and they measured also what they call proximal, that is the most proximal copy of the lac O. Okay, I mean they measured. Sorry, I go back so just to show you what is the story. You have an array of lac operon here, okay? So they measure it both this side and this side by PCR, okay? Sorry, go back. So when you go to measure by this story here, sorry, the proximity answer, okay? So you see here that you have this kind of situation. So you make plus IPTG and minus IPTG. So you have plus IPTG means nucleoplasmatic, right? Minus IPTG you mean peripheric. So you have, as you can see, this is the background interaction, and this is the interaction you obtain minus IPTG. Okay? This is 5', so it's the farther side, okay, and this is the proximal side. You see, it increases like 4 times or something. This is with a fusion with lemon B1. This is another fusion, then with emerin D, and again you have more or less the same results. Okay, so background binding, and then this is the increase, background and increase. Minus IPTG. Note that this is clone S, okay, so the one that has a little integration. Then the final story is DEM OCT1. Do you know what is an OCT1? Never heard about it? Okay. I let you thinking about. You can go to this database and find what it is OCT1. This is a control, negative control. As you can see, there is no change. It's a negative control, but you will find what is UniProt, what is OCT1. So, all this story was still a control, a check of the system working. Now we go to the real question, that is the transcript level. So, is hygromycin, that is the reporter, is it expressed when we remove IPTG from the cells? Okay. So they, at this point, they went on to measure hygromycin gene activity. Okay. Okay. So there is also a control here that I put here on the with the arrow, because here they say importantly binding of nucleoplasmic GFP lac Y molecules to lacosite in the reported cost did not impair hygromycin expression. This is important because, of course, you have a construct that is the fusion of this LECI, okay, with the GFP that goes to binds the reporter, okay, and so you can think that, okay, you have all these proteins bound to this reporter, it can repress the gene itself without the story of relocalization, also when you are in nucleoplasm. So what they did was to try to express this fusion, LACI GFP without tamarind, okay, and to measure the expression. And actually, the expression is not changing, so they decided that the binding was not changing. This is important. Also, the problem is that tamarind also can function as a repressor, as I told you, even though they removed the repressor part of the tamarind, but there is still a question remaining, maybe that the tamarind actually is a repressor, also the small fragment that they kept. And so to rule out the possibility that this segment was mediating repression in absence of repositioning, of course, we generated a nucleoplasmic version that lacks the C-terminal transmembrane domain necessary for targeting to the INM. So this kind of other vector. So this protein here, in addition to lacking for the repression domain, also lacks the transmembrane domain that is necessary to reposition. And as you can see, also this vector did not repress the agglomerin gene. So all the controls are negative. Okay. Okay. So at this point, we can move to the expression story. And so we move to figure 3. And this is the result. Okay. This is the result. This is clone M, clone S. This is IPTG plus minus, okay? This is the vector, that is the complete vector. And this is the relative agglomerin mRNA. So we are at the end. In the middle of the lesson, we can go to Socrative. There is a small test just to know if you understood the paper until now. I have just to launch the Socrative test. Okay, so the first question was, how is the expression measured? This is the first question. Yeah, the second question was, I don't remember. How to normalize. Okay, so try to answer. I mean, most of you actually were green, so it's quite easy to answer. So this is quantitative PCR, of course. That is the easier method to go. Of course, and to normalize, of course, we normally use a kind of housekeeping gene. Normally, in the labs, we use 18S ribosomal RNA, that is the most common gene to measure. Actually, because it doesn't vary so much in between the cells to cell or different condition, experimental conditions. Okay, so we can start again. So they were easy questions. So the result is that the result what we expect. Is this result what we expect? More or less, yes. Because when we remove IPTG, we have decreased transcription. Is that okay? Removing IPTG means allowing repressor to bind to the nuclear periphery, right? Okay? So there is any special reason why the result is so small? Do you expect the result to be 100%? I mean, theoretically, one can say, okay, all the vectors go to the periphery and all the periphery will be silenced completely. Why the result is something like this one, in your opinion? Anybody try to answer?
Yeah.
I mean, from a theoretical point of view, you just don't know how the story was made and so you may expect okay, that you have a something like 100% response. So all the gene is down. Why is not down? Actually, it's not logical, but try to find an answer.
Maybe they integrate in a region that is not transported from the central of the nucleus to the periphery. I don't know.
Warm. Your answer is can be good, but just thinking about what we said before. You remember the first very worst of not results that we mentioned before.
No. Constructs
are not that one.
The reposition in the atmosphere in mitosis.
Exactly. So we saw that the reposition needs mitosis, and of course you have not all the cells undergoing mitosis. Okay. So this is the percentage of cells that underwent mitosis, and then is a small fraction of the cells, of course. Even though we are using with fibroblasts, as you know, in culture are really active from a mitotic point of view. Okay, so good. Anyway, so okay. Now they say, okay, this is good, but this is a kind of average. Okay, so it's a kind of we take on millions of cells and then make a RNA prep. And then we run RT-PCR and see nice results that we see. But actually, we wanted to know whether a single allele in a cell goes to the periphery and that one is not transcribed. That one exactly is not transcribed, not another one. Okay? So they made a kind of really more sophisticated work in the sense that we next perform single cell analysis. Okay, so single cell analysis using 3D RNA immunofish. So as you probably compiled it in the methodological wiki, this RNA immunofish in 3D means that you are detecting only RNA, not DNA, okay, in cells. And 3D means that you keep the nuclei spherical, so in the original position. And so they did this kind of story. And this is the figure 3B that you have in the paper, in which you see a very nice situation. So in the first row, okay, what you see is a very enlarged situation with the confocal microscopy. This is the nuclear border that is here and here. Okay. And they made two kind of stories. The first was to make an anti-lac eye. Anti-lac Y is an antibody against the repressor. So it will localize the place in the nuclei where the lac eye binds. And as you can see, this is the construct GFP LacAI without hemerin. So of course it is not on the periphery, it's in the nucleoplasm. And you see there are two spots here. Okay, that means the two locations in which the transgene was integrated in different chromosomes probably. Okay, and this is the hygromycin RNA detected by RNA immunofish. Oh, too many M. Immunofish. So you see that they co-localize perfectly. Okay, so where you have the signal of hygromycin RNA, that is this red spot here, is exactly in the same position in which you see the left eye protein. Okay, so again, this is the other spot, and again you see the red signal exactly in that position. So it means that the nucleoplasmic construct is transcribed in RNA. Note that, please note that this hygromycin RNA immunofish detects the RNA in the meanwhile it is transcribed. Okay? This is very interesting. Because of course RNA that is completely transcribed will go away from the site. but they were able to pick up the signal in during transcription. This is very interesting. Okay, now go to the other construct. In this second and third rows, you see the GFP lac I, the emarin construct, which is relocalized to the membrane. Okay. And now look at this. You have the spots of lac I that clearly demonstrate the location of our reported gene in the nuclear border. Okay. Look at the RNA immunofish, no signal. Okay? So this means that exactly what we expected, when the gene is relocalized to the periphery, no transcription. And this is even more interesting because examining several cells, they were able to pick up one nuclei in which there were the two locations that were differently localized. You see here, this spot is a nucleoplasmatic allele of the integration, so this has not been relocalized, and this has been relocalized. Okay, and as you can see, the transcription here, you have transcription, here you don't have the transcription. The same cell. Nice, very nice. Okay. Good, so actually this kind of result may be enough if you want. What they added to another proof to what they say is to see whether the gene, the reporter gene, is not transcribed and is also heterochromatic. You remember that there are specific modifications to histones that are typical of silenced genes, you remember? One of those, for example, is this H4 acetylation. Okay, so they measured the acetylation of the nucleosomes on the reporter gene. Okay, and this is the CHIP analysis, okay, that you know. This is written what it is, but you know, very good. So they used an antibody against acetylated histone. And as you can see, again, when you have plus IPTG, means nucleoplasmatic reporter, you have high acetylation. Does it fit with your knowledge? Acetylation usually associated with active, right? So this fits. When you have relocalization, you remove IPTG, relocalize the gene, the acetylation level falls down. Okay, everything fits. Good? In clone M, same story. So please go to Socrative, and now you have another quiz. I have to launch it. So I leave it open, then I will close it again later on. So the first question was, sorry. The first question was, can you repeat it for me? Yeah. So this was a multiple answer questions, and you have to check several things, right? So probably it was completely red because there was many of you probably choose only one. So which are the components for a mammalian expression vector? Can try to repeat?
The bacterial replication.
Yeah, this is just because the vectors has to be reproduced in bacteria. You cannot reproduce anyhow. Okay, so the bacteria origin is necessary. Then
the
poly A tail is absolutely essential because no poly A tail, no expression in mammalian systems. Then a viral promoter that we saw, okay. Sorry? A selection marker. This is also important because otherwise you won't integrate, okay? So this was the first question. The second question, most of you actually answered correctly, and was, can you repeat the question, please? I can see it, I mean, but if you can repeat. Yeah.
Where after the first transfection, the roots were created by transfection with the GFP1 lac.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
With the
Okay, the first transfection is only with the reporter vector. Okay, a reporter is TK hygromycin and LACO. You select and you have fixed clone. Then you can over transfect them with the different version of the proteins. Okay. Third question was. You have still open.
Other reagents for human transcription factor, mammalian transcription.
Yeah, OCTA1. You mean? Yes. Yeah, OCTA1 is a mammalian transcription factor which is expressed mostly on lymphocytes. Okay, is the main driver of lymphocyte IgG expression, immunoglobulin expression, and they use it as a control because these cells, fibroblasts, they do not have expression of OCTA1, and also because in the reporter there is no OCTA1 binding site. So of course, it's a negative control. The fourth question was, you have closed the test, so you don't remember. You don't? Neither do I. Maybe that clicking here, there is the Yeah. One of the reagents used to make the experiments is starting figure 2. Yeah, this is the octa one. So the third was different. The third was on the NUP 153. It's not seen at the sites of tetrahedral foci because it's, a component of the nuclear pore. And the nuclear pore, as you remember, are excluded from heterochromatin. And finally, question 5. That was the results containing histone acetylation contradict the hypothesis, and of course the answer was false because they actually agree with the conclusion. Okay, good. So can I close the Socrative test? Finish. Then I will give you the report as the other time. Good. Thank you very much for participating in this Socrative quiz. Okay, now the last question that is also as important as the other before, because until now we actually the authors worked with a synthetic situation. Okay, so they have integrated reporters, they had recombinant fusion proteins and all this stuff, and these cells that they use are everything but normal, natural, okay? So they decided to see if this happens also to endogenous genes, because of course your gene is integrated in cells somewhere in the chromosome, okay? And it is tethered to the periphery, but the reason why it becomes heterochromatic, it's not expressed, it may be very different, maybe from the amount of repressor bound to it, the kind of proteins that interact with it, and so on and so on. So they decided to look at the endogenous genes that are flanking our integration site. Okay? So the question is, if I really have heterochromatization because of the nuclear periphery relocalization, also the genes that are on the two sides will be probably heterochromatic. Okay, so they started by localizing the genes that were on left and right. So what they did was to make a map of one of the integration sites in clone M. So they took clone M and no, sorry, clone S, was a mistake, and they try to look for integration site. Can you imagine how to proceed for making this kind of localization? Any idea about? So you have an integration point, but you don't know where, okay? In the chromosome. Yeah?
We can make a probe to the DNA and linked with probe something to our.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, okay, so usually the normal procedure is first I make a fish. Okay, so I know the chromosome in which it is integrated. Okay, this is already an indication. So they found in chromosome 5. Good. Now, second step is to try to reduce the amount of DNA that you have to explore. And you just remember how the Human Genome Project guys proceeded. Do you remember the hierarchical cloning, the BACs, cosmids, plasmids? Okay, so these clones are still in repositories. Okay, the researcher writes to the Sanger Institute, for example, in England, asking for a BAC, okay, which represents part of the chromosome. So more or less you know which BAC may be. Okay, they give you a collection of BACs taking this arm of the chromosome, okay, and you make a screening with your probe. You identify the BAC, and then you proceed as you say. So the probes and then sequencing on the right, sequencing on the left. Okay, so you identify the BAC. The BAC is smaller. Okay, the chromosome is something like, I don't know, 200 millions. A BAC is 300 kilobases, so you can sequence and find. So what they found in clone S was that there was an integration point here, as you can see. In the BAC probe is this one, starting from here to here. It's just taking a small part of the chromosome 5. And then looking at the integration point, they found it here, more or less, here in between. And so there are two genes here, CXCL5, CXCL1, okay? And they, at this point, they measured the expression of those genes, okay? Actually, they measured also the expression of farther genes, like this BLC gene that is 92 million away. This is the another gene. And actually, these genes were not changed. The expression of these genes were not changed. But looking at these two guys here, they were -1.7, -3.5. And the results are there, okay? So again, this is relative mRNA level. Okay, this is the hygromycin, the same experiment as before. And this is CXCL5. Five, as you can see, decreased, CXCL1 decreased. So the answer to the question is that also the genes that are farther away from the center of integration, since they are close to the periphery, they get repressed as well. Okay? So that's a very important point, because of course they are quite far away, okay, looking at this, and from the integration point. And so, of course, it's not conceivable that are the LAC proteins that repress also those genes. I mean, they are far away, okay? So they, anyway, get repressed. Okay. So they also, in figure, supplementary figure 7, there are also the colocalization. So they try to make LAC O-insertion and the CXL1 and CXL5, and as you can see, there are colocalization in the nuclei, so everything fits. Again, it's just a control of the situation. Okay, now, the question moving a little farther and see, okay, now I should test for a gene that has nothing to do with the transgene, okay? So is this situation of being recruited to the periphery also visible in an endogenous gene? So what they did was that they took the immunoglobulin EV chain IGH loci. Okay? And of course the immunoglobulin EV chain in fibroblast should not be expressed, of course, because it's immunoglobulin expressed in different cells. And they tested in fibroblast and in T cells. In T cells, this gene should be re-expressed, Okay. So this is the story. You see here that in T-cells you have a clear peripheral signal for the IgH. And in the fibroblast you have clear nucleoplasmatic signals. Okay. So they took these two genes, and what they did was to make a dumb ID assay. Again, so they took fusions of them with lamin B, the same that they used before, fusion of them with emerin, the same, and then the same fusion as before, then with OCT1. This time, please note that we are working with lymphocytes. Okay, so in the lymphocyte, OCT1 is expressed, okay, and it actually regulates the IgH expression. So it is supposed to interact with IgH. So at this point, they asked for, if maybe you remember more or less the structure of the IgH, the immunoglobulin loci, they have a VDJ recombination, you remember? It's V, D, and J parts of the gene, more or less, okay? So they actually asked for, as you can see with the dumb, they run PCR for the dumb ID. This is on one region of the VJ recombination, okay? And this is another recombination event, okay? This is a completely unrelated gene, it's a U7 sRNA gene. And this is a hypersensitive site that stands distal from the IgG locus. Okay, so this is another place. So when you make a dam in fibroblast, NIH-33 are fibroblast. Okay, what you see is that in all cases you have very high signals. You see there, very high signal, high signal, high signal. What is the meaning of having a dumb high signal? It means that when you use a lamin dam or a emerin dam and you have a signal on the locus, mean that the locus is close to the periphery. Can you follow me? I lost you. Is that true? I lost you? We are using a dumb ID, using as a target an endogenous locus, which is the immunoglobulin locus, okay? In fibroblast, the immunoglobulin locus is not expressed, so it is supposedly to be on the periphery, okay? As we saw with the fish before, okay? So if I make a dumb fusion with emerin or with lamin B, okay, and then this IgG locus will be on the periphery and will be modified by the dam. Okay, so when I make PCR out of it, I find the gene over there. I find the gene VJ, very high signal over there. Okay, with both the lamin and so on. Okay, I don't find with Octa. Why I don't find any signal with OCT1 fusion? OCT1 is a transcription factor which is expressed in lymphocytes, okay, and which regulates transcription of IgG, immunoglobulins. So why I find a low signal for OCT1? Exactly, so the OCT1 is not close to the locus, it's not binding the locus. Okay? Clear? Okay. Now look for the situation when we go to a lymphocyte. Okay, this is a pro-B cell line. Okay? In this case, the immunoglobulin is expressed, so it is in the nucleoplasm. Right? And since it is expressed, it will have the transcription factor bound to the promoter. OCT1, okay? Now look if the result is the one we expect. And you see here, clearly, when you use lamin B or DEM, EMD, low signal in the IgG. You see that? Low, low, low. Okay? But if you look at the DEM octa 1, in this case, of course, it's very high because the octa 1 is bound to the story. Okay? Good. So, this is the demonstration again that you have the same situation with the endogenous gene. So, looking exactly at something that is not a recombinant or something, is a IgG locus, okay, you have exactly the same situation, okay, interaction with in a cell which express or doesn't express the gene. You see that exactly the other way around. Good. So the conclusion is that such interaction with the inner membrane lamina may establish an inactive state that inhibits access of transcription activators and the recombination machinery to the IgH locus. Okay, this is the conclusion. And then there is a discussion. So the very last part of the article, of the paper, that you see in all the papers, there is a discussion of the results. What means discussion? It means that the authors try to first to see whether the results are solid and if there is something still unclear in what they saw. And second, they try to compare with other results in the literature. Okay, so this is the kind of discussion. So they say, how does attachment of mammalian gene to ENM promote repression? Well, the possibilities include first the sequestration from the RNA pole. You remember that we saw that the RNA pole are usually in the middle of the nucleus. So probably when a gene is in peripheric, it's not attached to the RNA pole. And second, of course, the assembly of a repressive chromatin structure, so what we call heterochromatin. Okay, so this is the discussion. And you will find in the afternoon another activity that is what we have learned today. So you have just to write what you have learned today. Any question? Yeah.
I have a stupid question.
Yeah.
The word tapering.
They work?
The word tethering.
Tethering. Tethering. Tethering means tethering. Bringing something close to.
Okay. Because it was not clear.
Pulling something close to. Okay. Any other question? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
The repression is a consequence of the tethering.
Yeah.
Because why? Because the repression doesn't occur in the
entire. Yeah. Because I think that the have you got the question your colleague made? She asked the point was if was the heterochromatization leading to localization or vice versa, actually. And she wonders if the results actually justify this conclusion or not. Actually, probably the most important result they show in the paper for that is that figure in which there are the two alleles, one that is in the center, the other one is on the membrane, and with the RNA fish they show that the one that is tethered is not transcribed while the other one that is in the middle is transcribed. But I understand the question is still there, I mean, because you never know. I think that nobody actually answers completely to this question. After, this is a paper of 10 years ago. Then there are other papers, other work made by different groups trying to ask in this story, and the conclusion are not clear at all, because you never can distinguish actually so good if is one another. But anyway, for example, if you, this is a good subject, for example, for your report. There is a paper that appeared just 2 years ago from another group. They made a different kind of story on single cells, and the conclusion are quite good. Any other question? Anyway, I hope that the, okay, this was of course was complementing the our first chapter of the course, of course, but also I hope that I have given you an idea of how you have to examine all the papers. Always try to answer to everything, to understand everything, okay, in the paper. So all the questions that I made to you, either saying or in the Socrative test, are the kind of questions that I can give to you during the exam. Okay, so looking at the paper, we'll ask you why they use Dr. One, why they so, okay, these kind of things. Okay, good. So see you on Wednesday now.